accession number 19658, Reel 2.
Doug Bushby, Reel 2.
On a slide rule, and then I'd order, and each regiment, we used to do that on a weekly basis. As I say, everything was rationed, so you had to be fairly accurate. But I enjoyed doing that, but it's surprising today, 40 years later, I don't even know how to use the slide rule. And the other duties involved were, as I say, equipping members of 161, 162 and 163 battery out with clothing, plus the div sigs and transport. So it was rather an involved job. I became a sergeant then, and I had a warrant officer and a captain over me. There was only three of us there, so it was rather an interesting job.
Where was this regimental HQ?
It was up at 163 Battery, or near 163 Battery. Each battery was in a separate position.
So it was a stable HQ, it wasn't moving from place to place?
Not at this stage, no. This was getting a few months before the peace talk started. As I say, I had 11 months at FMA, and I had about 8 months up at the regiment, and then that's when the peace talk started.
Were you within range of enemy fire?
We were always within range. Our biggest, at FMA getting back, our biggest problem was aircraft. We used to have lights out around about 10 o'clock, and we had this idiot North Korean who we used to call Bed Check Charlie. And he'd fly over every night and scare hell out of us. But up at the regiment, all you could hear was our 25-pounders going off, and the crackle of North Korean fire. But as I say, in the latter part of it, it started to die away. But there were times when our guns were overrun by North Koreans, but that was prior to my arriving there.
And this pilot you called Big Check
Charlie? Bed Check Charlie. Because he came over every night when Bed Check started. You know, when the Brit officers used to come around and make certain everyone was accounted for. And he always seemed to fly over and always to say he used to drop hand grenades just to scare us.
Bed Check. Yeah. Bed Check.
Yeah, Bed Check.
Charlie.
I think a lot of people remember Bed Check.
And so this was a bomber, was it?
No, it was just a light plane.
Like a reconnaissance plane.
Exactly.
So it was never shot down?
Well, I don't know whether it was the same one every night, but it was just deployed by the communists probably to fool us. But up at the regiment, we used to go swimming in the river, and it wasn't uncommon to see we used to have lookouts for the sea snakes. They used to prance along, and I remember once I saw a terrible sight. Was a American Negro across the bridges that were left standing. They used to put these mine nets, and he must have got caught up in this mine net, and we were swimming, and next minute it looked like an aircraft carrier going past us. He was bloated to hell, and I've never seen a sight like it.
Because he'd been bitten by a snake?
No, because he got caught up, drowned in the river, and got caught by these nets. And when freed, a terrible sight.
Which river was this?
The Imjum.
Any other accidents you remember in Korea?
Oh, there was lots of accidents. We had a New Zealander, Stewie Craig, who stood on a mine and became blinded. We had one New Zealander taken prisoner. We had 47 killed. And all general minor accidents. I think a mortar hit two friends up at the Div Sigs. It was Reed and McRae. I went and saw their graves when I went back to Korea on a revisit in 1986. But apart from that, I don't know of any real accidents.
Did you go to the front line yourself?
I went up to the OPs just as a... the officer said, would I like to go up? Because when you're a sort of, how do I put it, a backroom boy, you're doing everything that the OPs tell you to do. Like, with the 25-pounders, they would order a Mike Target or whatever, and we used to just send that, the instructions forward.
What?
So they sent me up there just to see how the other half worked.
What was it like?
Well, I quite enjoyed it, to be quite honest. It was peaceful, very peaceful. But what? You had to be so alert. I think the OP officers were specially trained. They looked, you know, they had to be aware of movement and where fire was coming from and everything like that, so you could direct back. It's a job I would have liked. To me, it would have been a challenge. But I was quite happy with what I was doing anyhow.
Did they point things out to you?
Oh, yes, they'd point out where they were, and like each hill had a name, and like the, especially on the Hook, there was places like Betty Grable, and then there was 355, and then there was the biggest battle in New Zealand just got into was on Cap Yong, the Battle of Cap Yong. That's where the New Zealanders were ordered the presidential citation, but our government's, the citation was awarded to the regiment, but our government turned around and said if the other volunteers that served in Korea, if they couldn't wear it, no one would wear it. But with the Australians, they still wear it to this day. It was through the Australians and the New Zealand regiment that the Battle of Cap Yong was won. So we still don't wear the Cap Yong battle medal.
So you're in Korea both in summer and winter?
Yes.
What were summer conditions like?
Completely reverse. It was that hot. You just sweated all the time, and each day we had to take salt tablets. It didn't worry me because I like salt, but it used to upset a lot of the other members. You just walked around semi-naked all the time. It was just unbelievable that a place could get from one extreme to the other.
What opinion did you and your comrades have about the enemy?
Well, I never came in contact with them, but we heard them, you know, there was a lot of propaganda, and they sounded a hell of a nice people. Like Christmas time, they wanted to hang Christmas presents on the guns. They used to say, this isn't your fight, Kiwi. just propaganda. But I remember when going back to FMA, they had a big demonstration of the South Koreans demonstrating at our FMA barracks there, and they used to say, give us unification or death. Well, you didn't know who the hell you were fighting in the finish, whether it was North or all these school kids carrying these big banners, give us unification or death.
How many of them were there?
There used to be thousands of these lined up at the gates, and the English had machine guns. They had a sandbag position there with these machine guns on them, and there were the New Zealanders up in the dorm yelling out, let them in, let them in.
Why did they shout that?
Just for fun. They're only school kids. But this is it. There was propaganda on both sides.
How old were these school children?
I'd suppose no more than 13.
So who'd organise this demonstration?
Mainly the students themselves. Why pick on us when we were helping them? Because I remember when we were sent to Korea, they said, you're going to a country you never knew and people you've never met. So why pick on us? We were helping them. And yet now the Koreans are so grateful for the help. It's just unbelievable going back on revisits. Even now we have very close associations with the Korean embassy. They take us out to barbecues, and wherever we go, they had a Korean church and invited us there, and then after the service they presented each member of the Lower Hutt branch with wallets, and you know, they just can't do enough for you. And even on the revisits, we had 10 days free accommodation living in the Ambassador's Hotel, free transport, free picnics, free barbecues. Everything was provided free.
So there were no hard feelings towards the enemy?
Well, not as far as we were just doing a job.
How did you get on with the other allies apart from the English?
Well, we got on well with the English, but it was just that they were younger. And I admire them now, because they were only kids. So you take the Gloucesters. There weren't many of the Gloucesters came back. They were murdered just through ignorant English commands. But as far as the only people we didn't get on with were the Canadian Vandoos. They were just animals.
In what way?
Well, they were in charge of the prisons, and I think they were far worse than the North Koreans.
Which prisons were they?
The detention centres, you know. For, we used to have to deliver messages to the detention centres, and I remember going along once with as a Donner shotgun. And there was a poor bloke running round a flagpole with his nose to it. And he just went round until he dropped, and they'd pick him up. And these were our troops that they were ill-treating. So I believe a lot of them lost their lives overboard on the boat going home, and rightly so. They were worse than any North Korean.
So these were French-Canadian?
Yeah, French Vandoos. But as far as Americans went on, they were typical American, but they were good people. They would give you anything in return. As I say, we got heaters off them. We got lots of souvenirs off them, which we weren't allowed to bring home. I believe some did, like pistols and all that sort of thing. But and the Aussies were good. We used to call them thieves, and they used to call us drop shorts, but they'd never have anyone else but the New Zealand artillery backing them. But in general, we got on with everyone. It was just the Brits were a lot younger.
Did the New Zealanders' artillery drop their shells short?
Not deliberately, but one or two did. They used to call us the drop short boys. But no, they got on well, especially with 3 Battalion. And then 2 Battalion came over, which strangely enough we didn't get along with once again, because the Aussie 2 Battalion was mainly made up of Brits. But they used to get higher pay than us, which upset us too, the Australians. But we were well paid.
Did you see much of the South Koreans, apart from these demonstrations?
Oh yes, we had a lot to do with the South Koreans, but once again the language barrier was a problem.
What did you make of the South Koreans?
Well, they didn't have much to do with us. They were very Americanized. Their uniforms were typical American with sort of, what do you call them, cravats around their neck and all that sort of thing. Well, we didn't have anything like that. And they used to have special, when their trousers, they used to have these ringlets that kept the bottom down. They looked smart all the time, but I think not only for myself, but for other people that had anything to do with South Koreans, they weren't soldiers at all.
Why not?
Well, I think they were cowardice. When it got really in battles, they would retreat rather than defend. Not only with us, I think this would be borne out by other services, that the ROKs were, to me, cowardice.
Did you see much of the conditions of the civilians in Korea?
It was pathetic, the civilians. We used to, the poor old Mama-san, she would do all our washing for us, and, well, not all our washing, but, you know, if you're, and she would scrub away on a rock on a river and get clothes perfect for you, and all you do would give her a cake of soap for a day's work. And we had houseboys that used to look after the offices and that, and general kitchen duties. But they did it for a pittance. But they were likeable people, very likeable. The only thing was, as I say, food was our problem. Well, we used to buy eggs off them and boil them up, which was a no-no, and we used to get lettuce off them and all that, which we were told we weren't allowed to do, but we did it. There was nothing better than a bit of fresh bread and a lettuce sandwich. But these were all no-nos because of the growing conditions, you know, like the paddy fields were just everything out of the night carts spewed into the fields and also into the gardens and that. But why we weren't allowed poultry, I don't know, like eggs and that.
So the army had warned you not to do it?
Exactly, yeah.
Did anybody suffer any consequences of doing it?
Not to my knowledge.
Did you stay fit in Korea, apart from that accident you had?
Yeah, I was fit, yeah. We were all fairly fit. We used to play rugby with our natural enemies, the Australians. We'd play against them, and in the latter part of the Canadians, and in the Finnish, or not in the Finnish, but they selected the New Zealand rugby team, and they used to go to Japan and that and play. I wasn't good enough for that, but I remember coming home when we were 10 days based in Japan prior to flying back home. They had a big rugby game, and it was our job to go round and get all the frogs and crabs off the rugby pitch.
Were you able to keep contact with home whilst you were in Korea?
Yes, yes. Wrote regularly. I sent presents back. I bought my first Rolex watch from the Naffy. Cost £25. So I sent that home and a dinner set. Quite a few gifts I sent home. They all arrived perfectly.
Were they bought in Korea or in Japan?
Both Korea and Japan. Because we had access to the American PX.
Would you have leave in Japan?
Beg your pardon?
Would you get leave in Japan?
Yes, we were sent on leave twice during our tour of duty. And we'd go over on those big jumbo, what do you call them? Big planes that opened up the front of the nose cone. And then we'd go to Ebisu, change into our lightweight dressing, and then you could stop at Ebisu if you wanted to. It was a leave camp, but everyone used to get into their summer gear or flasher gear and then go into Tokyo, and that's the last they'd see of you for 14 days or 10 days, and then you go back to Ebisu and catch the plane back to Korea.
What would you do in Tokyo?
I don't know. We used to go to the Ginza Beer Hall. We stayed at the Marunouchi Hotel. I remember I stayed with an Aussie. We had a double bed, which four of us occupied, two Australians and two Japanese. And we used to send him off every morning to get a shoebox full of oysters for us. And that would cost 10 shillings baht for the oysters. I don't know how much the hotel cost, but we stayed there for 10, 12 days.
You say there were two Australians and two Japanese in the bed?
Yeah, but not males. It was just the Aussie and myself and these two girls.
So how often would you get leave? Just once?
No, well, I had leave twice.
Would you get presents or parcels from home of comforts?
I used to get Red Cross parcels. These were the parcels that we used to appreciate when I was at FMA, when the food was atrocious. We used to live on them and what they call the KD rations.
What was in the Red Cross parcel?
Well, you got mainly cake, chocolate, and a lot of stuff like sweets and that.
So, were you in Korea when the armistice was agreed?
No, I came home before that. We took a naval officer up to Panmunjom at the start, the very start of the peace talks, and then we came home then.
And were you then demobbed?
Well, we were put on territorial force for, I think, something like 12 months, only if we were called upon again. But since I've become very friendly with the Brits and I'm a member of the Manchester branch here, when we arrived back in New Zealand, we got a 3 months travel pass. We could travel anywhere in New Zealand on this rail travel. And since being back here, I've asked the Brits what they got, and they got absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. My biggest bitch at the moment, we have a New Zealand War Memorial in Korea. The Australians have got a War Memorial in Korea. The Canadians have got a War Memorial in Korea. The Queen went over this year to Korea. Britain is the only country that hasn't got a war memorial. And the British Korean Veterans Association are that upset about it that they're thinking of all donating money out their own pockets to form one, and to me this is scandalous. These Brits were only kids when they went over there and they're not even remembered. The Gloucesters are. They got a beautiful memorial. But how many Gloucesters came home? Not many.
How do you feel now about having served in the New Zealand Army in Korea?
Well, I'm proud of the fact. Proud of the fact. And they, as I say, New Zealand government have been good to me, or were good to me when we came home. They gave us cheap loans to buy houses, advised us what houses to buy. And when you did buy a house, they gave you £100 towards buying furniture. So they have been good to us.